morning. So since I'm talking to an ag crowd, I really should have changed this to residue-cy instead of literacy. I'm being trained as an ecologist, and so we think of it as litter, you think of it as residue. It's all the same thing, but what I want to talk about today is the buildup of this litter pool or this residue pool in no-till maize-based agroecosystems and talk about the controls on productivity and decomposition. Okay, so you can see that in these maize-based no-till agroecosystems, this litter pool or residue pool can become substantial. And we're wondering about the overall carbon dynamics of these systems and therefore examining the litter pool and how much gets decomposed and how it builds up over time are big questions when we're wondering about the overall carbon dynamics of these systems. So litter pool accretion or litter pool buildup is this difference between primary productivity and decomposition. And we know that primary productivity can be controlled by climate and management. So if we fertilize, we can enhance primary productivity and yield. And also we can correct for differences in precipitation with irrigation, which can also enhance primary productivity in these systems. Now decomposition can also be controlled by climate and management directly by affecting the microbial decomposers. So by creating a more hospitable environment for the decomposing organisms, we can directly enhance litter decomposition rates. And we can also indirectly affect decomposition rates through climate and management's effects on litter quality. So if we enhance litter quality, we could therefore enhance decomposition rates. So this data that I'm going to show you today is actually a small subset of a larger project. This is a carbon sequestration project at the University of Nebraska, and we're asking the question whether we can sequester carbon in agricultural fields. And we are doing this work in Meade, Nebraska, where we have three sites. We have an irrigated continuous maize site, an irrigated maize soybean rotation site, and a rain-fed or dryland maize soybean rotation site. And you can see that both of the irrigated sites are irrigated with center pivots. Each field is about 60 hectares, and they're about 1.6 kilometers from each other. So actually, before the initiation of this experiment, we took detailed measurements in each site of elevation, soil type, electrical conductivity, soil organic matter content. We also used near-infrared remotely sensed imagery and digital area photographs so that we could separate these fields into six categories. And then we randomly placed an intensive measurement zone within one of these six categories in each site. And within these intensive measurement zones, they're 20 meters by 20 meters, and we take all of our measurements in these intensive measurement zones. So we take measurements of crop growth, soil moisture, soil C, soil and plant gas exchange, productivity and decomposition, which we'll be talking about today. Now, because the differences between IMZs for the decomposition data is minimal, I'm using the IMZs as replicates. Okay, so this is pretty much a straight litter bag experiment. So in the fall, we harvest above and below ground crop tissue. We have three litter cohorts, which I'll be talking about today, which is 2001 to 2003. We then separate the above and below ground crop tissue into different plant tissue types. So we had leaves, reproductive structures, which would either be cobs without seeds or pod walls without seeds, depending on if we are talking about maize or soybean, and then stems, rootstocks, coarse roots, and fine roots. We then analyzed those plant tissues for initial tissue quality. So we did percent carbon, percent nitrogen, and carbon tissue fractions. We then placed these plant tissues in litter bags and the roots in root capsules. We placed the litter bags up on the above ground at surface of the soil, and root capsules we buried at 10 centimeters. We then decomposed these cohorts of litter for 3 years, and every 6 months along that 3 year time, we collected a subsample of those litter bags and root capsules. We then analyzed those samples for mass loss, percent C, percent N, and we also ash corrected these samples if they had substantial soil contamination. So again, I'm just going to be talking about the 2001 to 2003 litter cohorts. So we harvested the litter right before seed harvest time, and then split it up into different tissue types and placed it back out into the field in November of 2001 for the 2001 harvest. We then let that decompose for 3 years. So November of 2004 was our last collection date for the 2001 harvest. And you can see there were six collection dates throughout that 3 year period. We did the same in 2002, so this goes from November 2002 to November 2005, and the same for 2003. So these little litter cohorts, are also separated by the crop in question. So site one was the irrigated continuous maize field. So from 2001 to 2003, it's all maize. The irrigated maize soybean rotation, in 2001 we had maize, 2002 soybean, and 2003 maize. And then the site three, which was rain-fed or dry land, we again had 2001 was maize, 2002 was soybean, and 2003 was maize. So I'm going to be making comparisons between maize and soybean, as well as between management regimes and across years. So first, I'm just going to be showing you data for initial tissue quality, and I'm just going to be looking at percent N. Now, I've actually pooled all the tissue types together, and I'm going to show you site means for this data. Okay, so this is looking at maize percent nitrogen, and you can see that in 2001, the rain-fed maize-soybean rotation, the maize in that field had about 25% more N than in either of the irrigated sites. In 2003, we see a bit of an opposite pattern where our irrigated continuous maize site actually had more percent N in the litter than the irrigated maize-soybean rotation or the rain-fed maize-soybean rotation. If we look at these patterns across years, we can see that the irrigated continuous maize system, there were no significant differences in this initial tissue quality across years. And we also didn't see any differences in initial tissue quality for the irrigated maize soybean rotation, just looking this now, this is just with maize. However, in the rain-fed or dryland maize soybean rotation system, we can see that in 2001 we had almost twice the amount of percent N in our litter than we did in 2003. And I'll just keep going here and talk about why that's the case. Okay, in 2001, now this is just looking at maize. This was the start of the experiment. All fields got 127 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Now in the rain-fed site, those plants didn't get as big, yield was lower, and so that nitrogen sort of pooled up in the plant tissues, and that's why we're seeing substantially more N in that rain-fed site for 2001. Now 2003, our irrigated continuous maize actually got more nitrogen than our irrigated maize soybean and our rain-fed maize soybean rotations. You can see that the irrigated continuous maize got about 133 kilograms of N per hectare. I've lost my mouse. Okay. And then the irrigated maize soybean and the rain-fed maize soybean got 111 and 90 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And when we calculate our nitrogen additions, we give credits for the previous crops. And in 2002, the irrigated maize soybean rotation had soybean. And so there's soybean residue decomposing here. It gets, you get a credit for that. Therefore, you apply less N. And we're seeing that showing up in our percent nitrogen in the crops for that year. And again, the rain-fed maize soybean rotation where we saw these big changes in initial tissue quality. In 2001, it got 127 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and in 2003, it got 90 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So fertilization rate is really impacting initial tissue quality of these litter pools in these systems. And now this is soybean percent N, and again, we just have this for 2002, and we can see that there's no differences between irrigated soybean and rain-fed soybean in 2002. So just talking about initial tissue quality, so fertilization rate, especially for maize, really impacts the initial tissue quality of these litters. And accurate predictions of how much N you will need is a lot easier when you're working in an irrigated site where you know how much rain you're going to get, so then you can therefore be more precise in your N application rates. For soybean, we saw no significant site differences, but again, we don't actually fertilize soybean because it's a nitrogen fixer, and so the initial tissue quality stays the same. Now, since we've seen these initial tissue quality differences, we can make hypotheses about how we would expect this litter to decompose based on initial tissue quality. So those litters with higher initial tissue quality would be expected to decompose faster. So especially in 2001, where you saw the rain-fed site having much more percent N than the irrigated sites, we would predict that those sites would decompose faster than the irrigated sites, just based on initial tissue quality. However, that's not what we saw. So this is just maize decomposition. Here's our irrigated continuous maize, irrigated maize soybean, and rain-fed maize soybean, and this is just for maize decomposition. So in 2001, you can see that the rain-fed site, and this is decomposition per year, is slower than the irrigated sites. And in 2003, we see the same trend, although it's non-significant. If you look across years, there's really no change in these decomposition rates within sites. So irrigated maize seems to decompose the same across years, whereas in site three, we see less decomposition in the rain-fed fields than we do in the irrigated fields across years. And then for soybean decomposition, we also see no significant differences between irrigated and the rain-fed sites. So now we can create these exponential decay models based on carbon remaining over time. So it goes from 100% all the way down to about 20% carbon remaining after those 3 years. And because I didn't see differences between the different sites, I just made two functions with irrigated maize and rain-fed maize, and irrigated soybean and rain-fed soybean. But as you can notice, this decomposition is very, very rapid. And by 3 years, you've lost approximately 80% of that initial carbon that you had in the litter pool. And it's the same for soybean, which actually, if you were to compare that to a natural system, these decomposition rates are very, very fast. So when I opened this up, I started talking about the difference, what litter pool buildup is, and it's this difference between productivity and decomposition. But up until this point, I've only been talking about decomposition. So we need to also look at productivity, and you can see, and this, I'm just talking about primary productivity. This is both above and below ground, and we did these measurements. So yield is actually not incorporated in these numbers. So you can see that in 2001, where we had all maize, the rain-fed system had about 100 grams of carbon per meter squared less than the irrigated systems. And you can see in 2002, where site one was maize and the soybean sites were the irrigated maize soybean and the rain-fed maize soybean. Soybean has substantially less carbon in productivity every year, and we also see differences between irrigated soybean and rain-fed soybean. And then again in 2003, we see this difference between irrigated and rain-fed, where we have less primary productivity in the rain-fed systems. So now if we combine our productivity with our decomposition rates, we can look at how these litter pools will decompose over time and calculate how much carbon would be remaining at any point in time over 3 years or beyond. And you can see that there are initially these differences in productivity, but they all of these functions sort of converge to about 100 grams of carbon per meter squared per year. So using these functions, we can say how much of this 2001 cohort in the irrigated continuous maize system is left after 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years of management, so that we can predict litter pool buildup over time. And that's what I did here. So this last bar here would be what is remaining from that 2001 cohort. This would be 2002, 2003, all the way to 2010, where we had our, this would be our annual input of maize that year. So this is carbon accumulation after 10 years of management. So theoretically, this would be the litter pool size after 10 years of management. And you can see that there's not a huge difference between the irrigated maize soybean and the dryland maize soybean rotations. And I believe that's attributed to the fact that you have more productivity in these systems, in the irrigated systems, but they also decompose a bit faster, whereas you have less productivity in the dryland systems, but it decomposes a bit slower, which tends to even out over time. Now, 1,500 grams of carbon per meter squared in your litter pool is probably not what you want if you're going to be planting a crop due to, you know, trying to get nitrogen to that crop and also worrying about crop disease. But again, this is just the model of carbon accumulation. Okay, so I've shown that management does affect initial tissue quality and the ability to accurately predict N fertilizer can be enhanced by irrigation. Decomposition rates, very, very rapid in these systems. 80% of the carbon is lost by 3 years. And it doesn't seem to be affected by these differences that we saw in initial tissue quality. It seems to be affected by whether you irrigate or it's a dryland system. And then litter accretion seems to be mostly driven by inputs and productivity and by what crop is in question. So if you have a continuous maize site, you have a lot of productivity going in every year, which builds up your litter pool fairly fast. And if you have a maize soybean rotation, you sort of have this really high productivity switched with a relatively lower productivity crop, and so you'll have less litter accretion in those pools. So if you're really interested in what's going on with the litter pool, you can see that, you know, if the litter pool does build up to that size, it can be 15 to 20% of that carbon in these systems post-harvest, which is substantial. So those are the funding sources, and the CSP working group is amazing. Shashi Verma, Ken Kassman, Akeem Doberman, and Dan Walters have all helped with this project. So thank you. I think I did exactly 15 minutes.
We have time for one quick question. One has one brain.
Yeah.
I assume this is Shashi Verma's site.
Yes, Shashi's site.
His gas exchange data indicates that these sites are not really accreting carbon. So
absolutely.
What's
Well, if you're talking about the litter pool, I mean, this is just blowing off back into the atmosphere. We're not really seeing a lot of carbon sequestration. And actually, so part of that key would be, can we manage this decomposition process to get more of this litter into the soil carbon pool, which we haven't been successful at doing right now. So no-till isn't the total answer for this, it seems.
Yeah, let's give Amy a hand.